to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. Just Brent Weber on the board. We have S&P futures. Well, not that we have the futures up. We do. I'll tell you exactly where they are in a second here. But last night the Dow opened down 200. And then their memo must have gone out someplace. Because now they are they're down or they're up to something. So the S&P futures were down 20. Now they're up 36. NASDAQ was down 100. Now it's up 124. It's all that between 5 o'clock and, say, 7:30 last night. And I, for one, is somewhat puzzled. Did you get the memo, Frank? Just curious.
No, I did not get the memo, but the S&P futures are up 46, 47 right now.
They must have just dropped. I got them up 37 and a quarter.
Huh. I have it at 605. Who knows?
The yeah, but it's... are you one of Trump's new lawyers?
No, no, but I'm waiting. I will be as soon as I get my degree from the Trump School of Law, Donald Trump President.
Yeah. Well, it's what
the Trump University.
So I'm sure happy to see that in the new administration, we're still having this crazy stuff going on. Like as soon as the market opens at night, I mean, what piece of information did somebody get at 6:30 last night that the people at 5 o'clock didn't get?
I'm thinking it was in Europe or Asia. Asia's up over 2% right now.
South Korea got their 3% back. They lost Friday.
There you go.
And Nikkei's up 427. That's 1.5%. What's so hot over there?
I don't know. I have no idea. They didn't tell me.
I know. This is.
I'm the one that tells the Chinese everything. Trust me, they know everything about you.
Yes.
If you saw 60 Minutes, you know.
So the I was listening to. What are we going to? Is it possible? I mean, obviously the right does it, the left does it. Why are people? I don't know. I don't know how to phrase this, Manny. Why does somebody who's a reporter are they that ignorant that they this morning I'm listening to News Radio 78 because I had to get out of the alley and managed to make it out, so I'm waiting for Maddie in the church parking lot, and I hear the one of the guys from one of the Democratic representatives tested positive for COVID after he had his two shots of Pfizer. Now, he's not sick, I don't think, but he's tested positive. Okay, so that's fine. Well, when you have a 90% rate, that's going to happen to somebody probably. So, of course, the news report...
Did they test before the first shot?
Well, that's how it could happen. He might already have had it, you know, but probably
not.
Yeah,
he might have already had it. He might have gotten it immediately after the first shot.
And from what
go on.
And from what my doctor told me, you're still shedding for probably 45 days, even though you're no danger to yourself or anybody else, after your own antibodies kick in. It's not like it totally disappears from your system. The broken pieces of virus still show up on the test. Anyway, so the thing goes on to say he was one of the Democratic congressmen that were caught in a room on January 6th with the three Republican guys that refused to wear a mask. Now, I want to ask you, Frank, what manner of moron reads that report without saying, wait a minute, do we know for
the
a fact?
The same matter of moron that says the test is unsafe because Hank Aaron had the shot a week before and died.
Well, you got to die. You got to go.
It's
sometime.
The same thing.
Well, but I'm saying they don't. If none of those three Republicans had it, if they don't know for sure that one of the guys had it and was within 6 feet of the dude breathing on him, why would you even say that?
Because it sells newspapers. It gets eyeballs. I guess nowadays nothing sells papers. It gets eyeballs on the computer screen.
At some point, we need to stop this crap. Just so everybody knows.
Then you're stepping on people's freedoms.
freedoms to lie to people on a national stage.
Well, that's what the Republicans or the people who got kicked off Twitter are talking about.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of lying on the other side.
True, but and not to the same extent.
Well, okay, but I mean, there's
the
a big
constitution goes.
There's a big difference between Twitter and a News Radio 78 that's going to give that thing to.
There's no difference.
There's 200,000 people in a car in Chicago. Well, maybe not now driving. But
no, not the eyeballs that Facebook got or Twitter got.
But
no,
but wait a second. In Twitter, you know it's some stupid. I don't have a problem, honestly, with somebody. Well, I do because you shouldn't.
I listen to everything with a critical mind. I think the first thing we were taught was believe half of what you see, half of what you hear, and half of what you read.
Well,
we should start there.
What I'm saying is, it's one thing for some knothead on a Twitter thing to shoot out something stupid when you know it's a person, okay? And the question is whether Twitter should let it through unedited or not. I mean, I don't know where I stand on that. I don't know enough about it. But the idea that a news organization would do it to me is a different program. We don't do it.
No, we don't.
Well, I mean, nobody's paying for ads here like they are at News Radio 70. Just so everybody knows.
Listen to 560 if you want to hear stuff. You need to start listening to conservative radio, too.
Why would I do that? I don't listen to the liberal. Why would I listen to the conservative? Why do I want to listen to either
one? Well, you're talking about having listened to the liberal.
News Radio 78 doesn't do anything other than news, traffic, and sports, and once in a while they throw something in there. A news report allegedly that you have to listen to about 100 times.
But there's other alleged news reports here. Listen to WLS. Listen to 890 or 560.
What is 890? Well, I don't even know what their shtick is.
That's WLS.
I know that. I knew that from what's his name, Ron Riley, and those guys. Larry, who's the guy in the morning?
Larry Lujack.
Larry Lujack.
John Records Landecker.
Yeah. Showing your age, man. Hey, just so everybody knows, very briefly. When you start hearing this stuff about these tests, all right, and I'm not, I've read an awful lot about this because, I read this stuff from overseas. The way these tests were conducted, all right, and how you get to 90%, everybody, I just wish, just like we're going to talk here about these crazy stocks and how many people are on TV, including Elizabeth Warren, know nothing about what they're talking about.
Nobody knows what they're talking about, Tom.
I know, but you and I admit it. We'll at least bring
the
question.
We know more than anything I've read so far.
Well, yeah, but we're not going to say we know what happened because we don't. We're just telling you all the different
possible. There's something fishy that happened. The numbers don't add up.
Yes.
With what our knowledge says it is.
Right, let me finish this thing about the
100% certainty.
Let me finish this thing about the test. When Pfizer did it, when AstraZeneca did it, when Moderna did it, what they did is they took multi-thousand people, say 40. It was like in a 44 was in a Pfizer test. 32 or 36 was in the AstraZeneca test down in Brazil and Spain and some other place. They took those people. They gave half of them a placebo and half of them the vaccine. Okay, now, which I didn't know is that you got to put something nasty in the placebo to make your arm hurt so you think you got the vaccine and not just the saline solution. So anyway, but they just sent these people off into society. They didn't chase them down, all 30-some thousand people or 40,000 people, and give them tests every few days. So what they did was, when people came back sick, you know, that you actually had the disease, not just tested positive. If you actually had the disease and said, man, I got a fever, I got a cough, I got something. Those people, the first like 160 to 200 of those people that came back, 90% of them, or 93% in the Pfizer's case, and I think 80-something or 91 in the other one case, those people were the people who were the placebo side and not the people on the vaccine side. So the conclusion is that it was 90% effective. Plus, nobody on the vaccine side died. But they never once, unless you have some stupo reporter or somebody else reading into it, they never once said that none of those people ever got a mild case of it or anything like that. They said they never got sick and they never died.
And they don't tell us what the control group's behavior was with regard to quarantining or distancing.
No, they told everybody to go to whatever they normally did.
But that doesn't mean they did it.
I understand that. That's why the test, although encouraged.
Would I trust Moderna to say, hey, you might have it. I'd stay home just the same.
But what I'm saying is that the that they let's just say they were straight in what they did. Because that, I won't say that's bad enough. It isn't, but it's a short test. So what they, basically, that's what it is. So there's nothing that says that somebody on the Pfizer side might test positive, but they're not sick. And oh, by the way, they don't have enough viral load to infect somebody else, or they do have enough viral. I mean, that was never done. These things are that new. But right now, they sure as hell work better than nothing, it appears to me. So if everybody gets one, we're way better off. But there's no way on earth that it's 100%, that 2 years from now, that there's not one person in this country that's going to get the COVID. I just don't believe that, Frank. But I think the people that are vaccinated are going to get it. It appears they're going to get it a much more, what do you want to call it, a less invasive sort of a disease, and probably the death numbers are going to go down dramatically, which is pretty damn good after a year, don't you think?
Yeah, and a lot of that, most of that's the new technology in mRNA.
But what I'm saying, but why is it, if you read how they did the tests, why is the world so shy? Oh, my God. Somebody tested
positive. How many people read how they did the tests?
Nobody. Nobody.
You and me. Kevin. Right.
Kevin, Carl, what are our guys?
Carl. Well, I mean, it's a real small.
But don't you think you should before sample. You report on it? Just saying. Don't you think you should? Just saying, you know?
Right. But, I mean, how thick is the Chicago Tribune now? Its first section's like 8 pages long. It used to be 38. You used to get a lot more information.
Not to mention, it used to be, what's the lowest you remember the newspaper being?
A dime or a nickel. I think a dime.
That was, I don't remember, I remember it's 7 cents. Because my aunt used to go get it for my grandfather every night at...
Oh, I'm showing my age again.
Yeah, my grandfather would... He was a boilermaker, but he invested in stocks. That's where I got the fever, I guess. And then he would come home and he'd say, "I want to get tomorrow's news today." And he'd plunk himself down after dinner and he'd read tomorrow's paper. Then he had to go off and be a boilermaker in the morning. But now a very important question: the silver started to move the other day, and
you called that.
Yeah, but here's what I did: I put on the 25-30-35 butterfly, and the thing's already at 27.75. This thing's not going to go through my butterfly like dinner through a goose, is it?
That's why I suggested the 25-30-32 or the 25-30-33.
Yeah, but you didn't suggest it until I already
had it. There is a volatility skew here that will allow you to do that.
Yeah, but you didn't suggest it until after I'd already done the other one.
Go ahead.
You didn't suggest it until after I'd already done the other one.
Well, you didn't tell me about it before you
well,
did
that's,
it.
Well, that's... See, now I'm not supposed to put that detail out there. I'll act like another station.
Oh.
Now, nobody wants to know if I asked you first. The fact is, you didn't tell me first. You know, just...
you're safe with somebody who doesn't really care.
But so what do you think here? I got the GDX going up. We got a bunch of that, but I don't have any straight calls in there. I'm pissed. I don't. I usually do, but I don't today. What do you make of all this?
What I make out of all of it is, if the clearing firms sell you calls and it goes against them, the hedge funds, they're going to restrict your access to making it bigger.
I'm curious. I was looking at the thing last night. I think I sent it to you. I know I can't find it, but the firms, by the way, the firms are back restricting. All right, let's see if I can find the restrictive numbers. But you can only buy one share of GameStop today at Robinhood. I mean,
five options.
But the weird part is somebody, one of these guys on the list, you could buy like only 100 shares of stock, but you could buy 100 options. 100 options controls 10,000 shares of stock, right?
Yeah, I saw that too. I probably still have it sitting here.
Do these people even know their own business?
Well, what we're seeing is all these clearing firms are undercapitalized for moves like that. They really don't have a choice. It's not part of a massive conspiracy, despite my fake news.
No, here's
innuendo.
Here's what we, other than like the people talking like, Ted Cruz and AOC and Elizabeth Warren, they're out there bleating without knowing anything. We're not going to tell you we know everything, but here's what we do know. When a clearing firm gets in trouble like this, first of all, Robinhood went self-clearing, what, 2 years ago? I'm not so sure who they used to clear through, but they went self-clearing. And when a clearing, what happens is, if you do a bunch of options and you do a bunch of stocks, the options clear in T+1. You got to pay for them tomorrow. Stock is what, now down to 2 days? When we started, it was 5, then it went 3, now it's 2, I think?
I think when we started, it was $1.49. So, yeah, it's gone everywhere.
Yeah, but it's But there's a split between when you get your money for one and when you get money for the other.
So
the clearing firm usually has lines of credit to make up for if that goes, quote, the wrong way for them. If they have to pay for the options tomorrow, but they don't get the stock money until, so for instance, if I've got GameStop, pick a number, 300, and I say, screw this, I don't want 300 worth of risk. I sell my GameStop at 300, and say I bought the 200 calls, say, or whatever I got to pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
So now, well, depending on the premium, it's a little less risky position, because if it went to zero, I didn't pay 300 for the calls, right? So now the stock money the clearing firm's not going to get for 2 days, but the option money I got to pay for tomorrow. So there's a little bit of a spread there, which normally is not a problem, but it could get to be a problem because if it got so huge, maybe Robinhood's line of credit isn't that big. Okay, that's a possibility. We're just running down the list of what could possibly be wrong. The other is they have people that they did something on margin, either bought the stock at 400 or whatever. They might have been a little slow to cause the margin. Normally, if you buy a regular old stock, you have to put up 50% of it. Now, that margin is set by the Fed, out of all people. It's not set by the SEC. It's set by the Fed, all right, the Federal Reserve Bank. So firms are free to raise that number. They can make it, you got to put up 60%, you got to put up 70%, you got to put up 100%. If they were slow to do that, and somebody were to say, buy even 10 shares or 100 shares of a stock at 475, well, guess what? That's $47,000. So you put up half the money. Well, if it dropped below, you have a 30% margin maintenance requirement. So if that thing drops $200, there's a margin call out on somebody. If somebody doesn't send in the check and you can't find them, the clearing firm eats that, right?
Yep.
So if somebody, or I don't know if they let people short the stuff that much, but if they did, they might have a few people that shorted it at 100 and now it's 400, and those people don't send in the check. So anybody who loses money and their account goes debit, the clearing firm or the brokerage firm is on the hook for it. The clearing firm ultimately, in other words, if we had somebody like that, the person who's ultimately on the hook for it is IB or RBC, because there are clearing firms. But we're the first people to be on the hook for it. And if only we ran out of dough, then they're on the hook for it. But yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of ways for Robinhood to have gotten trouble here with the way this thing is being jumping all over the place. I mean, it's not just that they're incompetent. I mean, they may not be. So I mean, before everybody starts jumping at all the regulations and stuff, and my message to Elizabeth Warren and that group of whatever, there's a market discipline in this. If you think you're going to short a stock at $10, it's really worth $25. Eventually, if you believe the market's the pricing mechanism that it's supposed to be, you're going to get it stuck where the sun don't shine, right? And that's the discipline of it. Because I'm not worried about the Fed's regulation if I sell short a stock that's $20, it's worth $40. I'm worried about somebody willing to pay $40. Right, Frank?
Yep.
Same
and
way.
You and I learned that most people would say, with $40, that'll never happen. You and I have learned multiple times that what we think can't happen does.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. But I mean, there's people now, there's a bunch of these stupid things. But one of them is trading $41 on Friday, and somebody bought, I got the thing from Dr. J, somebody bought 11,500 of the 60 calls, right? 60s. The thing's trading 41. But that's a big, and they paid like $2 for them. But I'm not going to put the stack's name out there because I don't want people going to buy the damn thing. But, I mean, what are these people thinking? And the weird part is, if the things trade 80 tomorrow, I still could have done better for them. The 60s were not the buy. Sorry. Right?
No.
But no, a lot of things could happen here. But if you don't believe there's a market discipline, I hate to keep picking on somebody, but I don't get this Elizabeth Warren at all. The regulators have totally screwed up. We need more regulators.
She's been a regulator for a week. Come on, Tom.
No,
I'm just saying that the problem, if there's a problem, more likely it happened in the past 4 years than the past week.
I'm going to say the problem has happened. It's gone appreciably for the last 20 years as you have less and less people in the system. They only want to regulate four firms. There's no way on earth that Citadel comes out smelling other than like a rose on this. So what are your buddy Stevie Cohen? Tell us about him.
He has the ran an investment firm, SAC, Stephen A. Cohen, but Capital. And he paid a $1.6 billion fine to the SEC for fraud.
Without admitting or denying, though, right?
Without admitting or denying. But he gets to go back into business.
Yeah,
and you and
years.
I know people that are banned for life for far less nefarious reasons.
I know people that are banned for life for helping out people. Helping out people short the stock. So, Maddie, if... So, Maddie, if you get banned for 2 years and you come flying back in after 2 years, isn't that remarkable?
Yeah.
But what is the deal with...
And the guy who owned the original short hedging investment group was Stevie Cohen protege.
Yeah, this is Melbourne Securities, right?
Yep.
They supposedly lost half their money in January. One of the articles I read. Now, of course, I'm saying allegedly because who knows where these numbers are from. I don't know how anybody would find that number. It didn't sneak into their office at night or something. Because how would you ever know? But so that's what's happening. And those guys allegedly ponied up $2 billion for the place. And what Frank and I have read over the weekend is that the amount of short interest, and maybe you'd be interested in this, really hasn't dropped very much. That these guys are essentially electing to, feed the alligator. And keep phoning up the margin. So
we've also read where when Goldman Sachs took over Long Term Capital,
right?
They didn't bail them out; they took all the positions.
Probably
bailing out Long Term Capital and bailing out the Fed and bailing out the clearing firm. So people with deep pockets took it over the positions over.
But,
I think
I'm sure they
that
took them over to
where there's no change in short interest.
Well, that's right, and I. Because right now, I've got GameStop down 27.5, so it's trading 297. So I think these guys, if you think it's a short at 50, you sure as hell think it's a short at 300, right? And if you can hang in there, you think that the longs will, at the end of the day, the longs will be the one weeping. And maybe they're right. It could be. Because right now it's at a price where both sides, wouldn't it be something, Frank? I keep talking about this all the time, that when things run up where they shouldn't and run down real fast, people lose more money on the way down than they made on the way up. Because usually a lot of it's borrowed money. There's a tax considerations. Am I right or not? This could be one of these things where the shorts get screwed and the longs get screwed.
Oh, yeah. But who makes the money?
Duke and Duke. I think that if I was going to do the investigation, I'd look at this right from the get-go. Who was able to short this stuff? And I... obviously, my significant other, Audrey, comes on the show. She does a lot of real estate, but she has been in the business. She's still a broker here at PTI. She said, why can't we do something simple like go back to the uptick rule? I said, these idiots have let the, there's like how many exchanges now? There's no way on earth you can find out what the hell's an uptick. How could you? Just so everybody knows.
Oh, because of the gray markets and the black markets?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't know what's going on.
So back in the day, the rules are that you, if a stock is trading, say, telephone, because it never moved, it'll be 25 to 25 and an eighth. All right, so if the last trade is 25 and an eighth, you can't short it. You can't hit the bid. You have to wait for the offer to be taken. So if a trade's 25, you can now offer your stock short at 25 and an eighth. Well, you could anyway, but you couldn't get filled until it traded 25 or lower and it came back on... Because it has to be on an uptick. Now there's no such thing. So the idea
was the beauty of when the CBOE started listing stocks from the NASDAQ instead of the NYC, because I could short on a downtick in NASDAQ stock.
Right, and nobody, these little rule changes.
I loved it.
Yeah, but our regulators, Frank, they weren't you, they weren't me, they weren't anybody else. They have no idea what difference that makes in terms of if you get a panic down day and all of a sudden people get the short stack on the way down, whatever they damn well please. At the end of the day, if people wanted to get short, they could get short. Eventually there'd be upticks. Although really, in 1981, there wasn't much in the way of upticks. You could sit there all day waiting for an uptick.
Well, it was hard to monitor. I remember on October 19th, I saw somebody short something, or, you know, in the Black Monday, and I said, "You long stock?" He goes, "He'll never check."
Yeah, well, that was another story. Yeah. Well, yeah, you're.
And I thought, why am I waiting for an uptick?
Well, that's the truth. The people who cheated always did better than people who didn't, in a lot of ways. Because if you were big enough, or it was something they didn't want to really police. All right, but Frank, we also got to talk about these, how they bundle, just in terms of history. Like when my nephews were born and I bought them, you know, 20 shares of Disney, whatever the hell it was. There was an odd lot broker. We only got 2 minutes, Frank. There was an odd lot broker. And the tariff was, if telephone, I'll use telephone because I always had the best dividend reinvestment plan, DRIP program. If the stock's 25 to an eighth and you went to buy less than 100 shares, you paid an eighth through the offer, right?
Right.
And that was the tariff. So it was not that big of a deal. If you're buying 20 shares, it costs you, what, $25?
Mm-hmm.
So you buy the shares for your nephew, and that was what you got. But now this particular way, now the Robinhood and these guys, one share, 2 years, two shares, 10 shares, I don't know what their tariff is. And I don't think anybody knows. So if a bunch of people start buying GameStop, I use that as a term, if one share, two shares there, I don't know what the mechanism is, or if there's a rule that says they can't run out and buy 100 shares right now, and when they get up to 100 of people buying up to 100, that they can't fill them $2 away. And I don't know if they are or they aren't, but I don't think there's any stated tariff now, is there, that I know of?
And I've heard that a lot of these trades are taking place at the market.
A lot of what?
A lot of the option and stock trades are taking place are market orders.
Yeah, what's the
limit orders?
But what's the market in GameStop? Anything you want it to be? It's not a published market like the New York Stock Exchange would be.
There's the concept of fast market. When we were trading, if they declared a fast market, every trade stood.
Well, because all right, Frank, we'll talk more about this on Thursday because there will be more to talk about, I'm sure. SP Futures
up. Maybe we'll know more.
Maybe we'll know more. SP Futures up 39 just after being down 20 last night. NASDAQ Futures up 147. God, I wish I'd have got that memo at 5:30 like some people. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. This is Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. John Flanagan with us as well, trying to make sense of what's going on. And we're not coming up with answers here. We're just coming up with the questions here. S&P futures up 36. NASDAQ futures up 138. This is after opening down last night, 20-some. Dow futures up 248. They were down 250 last night, or 240 or something. Really, really strange. I mean, there's a memo someplace. I think a lot of it came out of Asia, where Nikkei is up 427, 1.5%. South Korea, which we talked about on Friday, down being 3%. They're up, they came back to 3%. Shanghai up 22.6%. Hang Seng up 609, 2.1%. Over in Europe, we got rallies there as well. DAX up 190, 1.4%. I remember last week was like the worst week since, October. So, we're doing the bounce here. Buy the dip, they say. FTSE up 76, 1.2%. CAC up 72, 1.3%. I don't know if that's a strategy, but so just as a review, Dow on Friday down 620, S&P down 73, NASDAQ down 266, so we're roughly half of the way back on the S&P, almost exactly half of the way back in the NASDAQ, and maybe 40% of the way back in the Dow. So we're down pretty heavy on Friday. Bonds, 1.07, the Bund minus 0.51, in Japan, look at this, almost positive 0.06. It's been 0.3, 0.034 for a long, long time here. Now they're popping up here. Oil up 58 cents, 52.78. Brent up 77 cents, 55.81. Natural gas up 18 cents, 2.75. We got gold. Get a load of these numbers. Gold up $18, 18.65. Silver up $3, $30. And copper was unchanged at 3.54. Is one of the shorts now people are identifying is this the silver ETF, SLV, which I trade a real lot. And I have a big position in there. I hope I'm real long. I just hope I'm not, I stay long because my short is a 30 strike and it's 27.63. So I'd like it to go to 30, but not like today. So Maddie, I want it to go up, but not so fast. Is it, is that, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. So what do you think about all this? You got it all figured out?
I don't have anything figured out. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We already have a couple of crashes to report. Looks like on the Stevenson, on the outbound side, just before Kingery, there is a crash blocking the right lane, and this is causing significant delays on the outbound Stevenson. Lakeshore Drive to the Tri-State is up to 19 minutes on I-55. To I-355, it's up to 37 minutes, so some solid traffic for this hour of the morning already on the outbound Stevenson, so keep that in mind if you plan on taking I-55 out to the southwestern suburbs. No issues on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford this morning. Eisenhower's still looking okay. Edens looks good, too. On the Kennedy, the exit ramp is closed on to Montrose on the outbound Kennedy. So you'll have to either take Irving Park or Lawrence to get around that. But that's going on until 3 p.m. this afternoon. So that'll open up for the afternoon commute. But that's the only issue on the Kennedy. No delays or accidents to speak of. Off the expressways, looks like there's a rollover pickup truck on Michigan Avenue at Oak Street, Chief. Not sure how a pickup truck rolls over on Michigan Avenue and Oak Street.
I'm going to say it was not the speed limit.
Yeah, I would say you're probably right. So that's has crews on the scene. And then down south, Racine between 82nd and 81st is closed due to a building collapse. Apparently a building collapsed that has that street closed.
It's also, I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, rerouted the number 44 Wallace Racine buses as well as crews work on that situation. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, not expecting any more snow today, so that's good after a rough weekend where we got, you know, 8 to 12 inches depending upon where you were. But we'll be cloudy and right around freezing, a high of 32. Right now it's overcast and 29 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a beautiful day down in the Valley of the Sun. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 76. Right now it's mostly clear and 54. In sports, the Blackhawks were struck with COVID. Five players out last night, but still had no issue with Columbus winning 3-1. College hoops, Loyola went down to Missouri State and blew them out. 72-46 was the final in that one. The Ramblers are 14-3, Chief, as they look to head back to the NCAA tournament. Northwestern fell behind big early to Rutgers, rallied back and made the game close, but lost at home 64-56. And lastly, over the weekend, the Cubs added another starting pitcher. They signed former Pirate Trevor Williams to a one-year deal. He's a right-hander, 28 years old. Struggled last year in the COVID season, but back in 2018, 2019 was a really good pitcher. 2018, I think he went something like 14-10 with a 3 ERA, so they're hoping they can get him back to that. Chief.
Is there any chance of getting me back to my past glory on the mound? I think I know. Just saying, you know. John, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm wildly perplexed here about the market, but this turnaround last night, as crazy as it is, I've been trading as if stuff like this is going to happen. So I actually could have a huge morning here for my people. I've been doing a lot of these 1x2 diagonals where I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. Where I'm left with the individual calls. So this morning we're left with a whole boatload of these GDX calls at a 2 cent credit, the 37 calls. I think it's trading 33 something on Friday morning, and now it's 36.14. So we're getting close. I mean, stuff is crazy. I mean, it's just crazy. I did a spread on the Russell, IWM, and it was a total clunker. I did the 214 spread. Stock goes down to like 208. I'm thinking, talk about buying the top. Well, the volatility is so damn high that I was long the 14s. I was able to sell the 15s, and I'm into the 1-to-1 spread for even, which, you know, normally what's the difference? I mean, you don't want to be, the thing is trading at 206, so okay, the 14-15 spread for even. Well, the thing's up almost $3 this morning. The spread's going to be worth something. I mean, you really want to use your head, and this is a time for, when everybody's just panicking into this stuff, they're paying prices that I can't even understand. And fortunately, it's working out well for some of my people. But these are skills that you do all the time, and you always, you know, take the thing and give yourself a chance in case something happens. I mean, because options do move more than they say they're going to move, than the models tell you. So you always want to put yourself in a position where you have a, you know, I'll use the term, a shot for free. And it virtually never works out, you know. You know, once in a while, maybe this week's the once in a while. Hey, I was reading the Republican plan. I sent it to you last night. I don't know if you read this, Manny. But it's one of the things that's gotten me so damn disgusted about. It's not only disgusted about politics. To be perfectly blunt, I'm getting more and more disgusted about the people who only talk about one side. And one side's right and the other one's all bad. As I look at these numbers, if you just follow the numbers, John, they're all crooks. I mean, not individually, okay, but it's somewhere along the line, you look at these numbers and they become, you know, thanks for the flash, Gordon. So Biden comes out with this $1.8-1.9 trillion deal, right? And everybody's like, oh man, it's too much money, it's too much money. Well, in the deal is $160 billion, I believe, you know, I mean, you remember, these numbers are spinning around my head, for vaccines, gowns, you know, distribution, development, I mean, you name it, right? Now, wait a minute, but whoa. We already gave seven firms $1.2 billion to produce vaccines of up to maybe, you know, 400 or 500 million vaccines. So, okay, so, and most of the prices, as I went through for people on the show, maybe, what, 3 months ago? Most of the prices were what, $15 to $20 a shot? Right in that range, depending on it. So let's see, $160 billion. If you buy another 500 million shots, which is like a real lot. I mean, but if you're going to export them and get places that should get them and don't, I mean, it shouldn't just only be us getting it. If you do that, the simple math is, what's 20 bucks times, you know, 500 million? 10 billion?
Where's the other 140?
Where's the other, yeah, where's the other 150? And yet, now the Republicans come out with their thing where they want to give individuals less and cut back on those kinds of things. The same number, 160. So it leads me to believe whose ever name, I want to, is it always been, you're the attorney in the studier of constitutional stuff, has it always been that these bleeps can talk about these bills and nobody has a clue what's in them until it's too late? I mean, I want to know a list of where this 160, you know, 160 billion? That was our entire federal budget in 2000. Now we're going to give it for masks and for gowns and for vaccine we've already paid for? I'm dying to read that list. Or, you know, I mean, I can't imagine how long the list must be, but.
Good luck trying to find it.
Yeah, you can't find it.
Or get a hold of somebody who has seen it or knows anything about it. You know, it looks to me, and, you know, I have no evidence for this other than just gut reaction, but if you look at the way pharmaceuticals have treated the typical American consumer over the years, and we get gouged up the wazoo for drugs that cost people everywhere else in the world a pittance of what we have to pay for it here. So I wouldn't be surprised if in this $160 billion giveaway, whatever, God knows what's factored into it. There's just another way of distributing the vaccine to a much wider population than what they're telling you it's for. And that again, the American taxpayer pays for it, and everybody else gets our largesse. And it's never explained in such a way, because I think people, you know, would say, well, why don't we just have a $10 billion appropriation for this? That should do it for us. It's never that simple, especially when you're dealing with multinational drug companies that are looking for the biggest spigot to go to for whatever they want to spend the money for, and they got a Congress that's more than happy to hand over whatever they ask for.
But how can that number?
It's the lobbyists, I think, who've just pushed it, and you got the two political parties vying for who's going to give the bigger, you know, piece of the gravy to.
But how do you? But Jan, how do you leave out of all the stuff you're pulling out? So Biden's plan was $1.9 trillion, and these guys are what, $650 billion? Did I get that one right, Manny? Is it $650 billion, $700 billion? So it's a third, roughly. Yeah, a little more than that, 40%. How the hell does this number, they can't shave a dime off this one, this part of it?
And how many, of course they could. Yeah, but, you know, it's already spent in some ways, I think. It's already been earmarked for stuff that is never discussed in you know, congressional debate or in the news or anything else. So it's going to happen in some fashion or another, and we'll never really know, I suspect.
Well,
how do you go up about finding where it went?
Well, just think, open your eyes, you two gentlemen. Open your eyes and just calculate how much could we possibly get ripped off in any one of these areas. I'm looking at the vaccine distribution. Okay, a lot of them being done in Osco's, a lot of them being done at CVS, a lot of them being done in, they're going to do what, Manny? They just opened up, not Secretary of State's office, they just opened up some other place where you go get the vaccine. They're not, how much more do you think the pharmacist, it's now given 50 shots a day at Jewel. You think they're tripling his salary for the day?
Of course not.
So, we're exactly, when you start going down the list, okay, the shot comes out, the shot's $20, all right? You gotta, if the Pfizer one, you gotta keep it cold, all right? So maybe you have to help, I don't know if you have to, if you have to help Osco and they gotta have a, if it gets there, let me see if I remember this. If it gets there with only 48 hours to spare, or 24 hours, they can put it in a regular freezer, refrigerator for what, 24 or 48 hours, something like that? So you probably don't need some massive freezer at every single Osco or every single Walgreens, I don't think, if your distribution's proper. So I don't think you're going to goose that guy. Maybe if you really throw him a bone, you're going to give him 5 hours a shot on top of his regular pharmacy. And I don't even think they're doing that because these places are not philanthropic. The other people at the hospital, you think they're giving them time and a half pay or double time?
No.
So where exactly in this system, other than people driving the stuff around, and obviously somebody's got to go out to a nursing home, so okay, maybe the three people who go to a nursing home, you're going to pay them, you know, a couple of $100 a day or 300 a day or whatever the hell they make, and you got to pay for the cars. So there's some cost there, but the entire budget of the 2,000 of the federal of the Fed. I mean, what are we? It's not even on the right planet, John.
Well, you think of the things that it obviously isn't going into. I mean, it's not going into any reserve fund for liability for any problems with the vaccine because they're not, you know, liable. So where does the money go? It probably goes into compensation packages. It probably goes into their advertising budget. It probably goes into their efforts overseas to distribute the vaccine. It has nothing to do with what the average person here is really interested in or is paying for it in their minds.
Well, they might obviously...
It's an old story in a way, though. I mean, there's nothing particularly new about this except there's an urgency to it.
The number's huge, Jen. The number's huge.
And the money, you know, it's somehow money that's going to fix this. And you and I know that, you know, money isn't at all what's really at stake here.
Well,
it's the fear factor that's far more powerful.
It's to be spent on vaccine development, distribution, masks, gloves, et cetera. I think I bought 30 masks at Walmart for $10. All right, so we can buy a hell of a lot of masks for $160 billion. Just saying. I mean, gloves? I mean, what do gloves cost? I mean, a whole box is what, $10?
Yeah, I mean, that's been factored into every, you know, medical operation, dentistry, critical care, whatever. This is, you know, there's nothing new or explosive about those costs. So.
Well, the, I'll say this because I trust my friends and I trust the people, the listeners. Everybody knows that I had a minor procedure. Well, it wasn't minor for me, but never minor if it's on you. In November, and it was a follow up of something I had done 12 years ago. It was supposed to last forever, and it didn't. But so it was no big deal. It was 2.5 hours. I won't even say what hospital. And the charge that Medicare paid was $19,000. Jan, what do you suppose the list price of that procedure was?
30.
You gotta get a grip, my friend. Maddie?
I didn't hear the question.
I said my procedure that Medicare paid $19,000 for, what was the list price?
$60,000.
You obviously don't listen to me. $135,000.
That's high.
What the bleep? So if I didn't have any insurance, they actually expect me to pay that bill when they're happy with 20? I mean, what planet are we on?
Needless markup.
I mean, so we're talking for 2.5 hours, there's four people. I don't care how much these people pay. They could be making $2 million a year apiece. It doesn't come close for a three-hour plan for it. I mean, if you paid them for the whole day, it's $20,000 is too much, not too little. What in God's name how do you get seven times that as a list price?
I'm just going to take me about a week to make up a list, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I almost wouldn't care if the people were getting it, but I know they're not. Where the hell's it going? So
are the people who are paying you. where are they going to be? They'll lose everything.
Well, we have a contributor to the show. I won't say what days he's on, but Monday and Thursday might be today's. Has a friend. I think I might have mentioned this once before. And the lady says, "By the way, where can my dad get a second mortgage?" He said, "Well, here's a place. Here's a lady I know. Blah blah blah." And then he says, "Well, what does he need a second mortgage for?" Well, he's got this hospital bill for like $80,000. He goes, "Well, let me see the bill." I mean, our guys, you know, our people on the show, our contributors actually care about people. And he looks at the bill, and it was the same procedure that somebody he knew got paid by Medicare like within the last couple of months, and the bill was like 18 or 20. This guy is willing to, he's ready to take, he's a regular guy. He just take a second mortgage on the house and send these idiots to the hospital $80,000. He goes, "Let me call him." Calls, he says, "I'm representing, you know, Jan Flanagan. What the hell's with this bill?" The guy goes, "Well, how much can he pay today?" And then knock it off. He goes, "Okay, he'll send you a check for 15. Okay. Jan, this is not right. And what are we doing? And how do we allow these people? We talk about regulation. Why does Elizabeth Warren and those other people, why do they let an entire industry like that off? And they don't care all the shenanigans that goes on in our business. You can name five firms that do 90% of the shenanigans. Yeah, we can't ever come down on them, can we? I mean, why are we down to, I mean, we're at the situation now, and I don't know if Citadel did anything wrong or whatever, but they're like 60% of all Robinhood's trades go through them, and they pay for them. They pay 58 cents a contract for options. And we have a populace who's convinced that they're trading for free. How do we dumb our population down to that level? I was talking about earlier with Frank. I buy 10 shares. It's free. If you think that, what is wrong with you that you think it's free? Somehow they're bundling this and they're making money on the bundle. The price they're actually trading is different than one they're giving. There's nobody is giving you a confirm and doing the trade and taking the responsibility for nothing. Why would anybody do that? I mean, it's so interesting when this first came out, when they had the electronic trading, and I'm not against it. I mean, a lot of people trade that way, and by the way, they do a lot of their own work and those kinds of things, and you know, you shouldn't, if you know what you're doing and you want to do your own stuff, there's nothing wrong with that. We do people electronically here. It's not an issue. But when this first happened, it's like, I'm being very blunt this morning because sometimes when, you know, money's flying around here, you got to be blunt. So, Chad, in Las Vegas, there's this big convention, so I'm talking to like 120 people. I said, by the way, does everybody think of all the new electronic trading stuff where you just trade yourself and blah, blah, blah? And everybody raised their hand. They love it. I said, why do you like it? The guy goes, well, I don't have to talk to my broker. And I go, okay. I said, so you think that's the reason for that? Well, yeah. I said, let me help you. The reason for this is your broker doesn't have to talk to you. The guy's like, really? Yeah. And then he goes, I'd love to do business with PTI. And I said, okay, well, because I'd like to talk to my brother Dan was there too. And he goes, yeah, you know, if I could talk to you guys for like free or for 50 cents a contract. And I go, wait a minute. I said, if you're going to talk to somebody, you somewhere along the line, that person's got to get paid, right? Well, yeah, I suppose so. So, by the way, what are you? Well, I'm a dentist. Well, do I get to come in and get my teeth cleaned for free? Well, hell no, that'll never happen. I said, but you think that you get to talk to my brother for free? Well, I guess you got to get paid. But how do you want to do it? Every time he picks up the phone, is it $500 an hour like an attorney? $300 an hour, $350? How do you want to do it? I wonder if I'd want to do that, but you don't want him to make any money on the trade either. So you basically want to talk to him or me for free. Well, you know, I mean, what do people think? This is not that difficult, John. Why do we have a bazillion people in this country think they're trading for free? Are they out of their mind?
Well, it's the same reason you think you get a flu shot for free,
yeah,
or a telephone for free, or you name it. I mean, people are acculturated into thinking that this is all just, you know, stuff that they have coming to them, and, you know, and they don't appreciate or care about the costs involved in furnishing this. And, you know, the advertising is part of the problem, but it's also just the culture is, people are misled. And, you know, they're misled intentionally, so that, you know, you end up paying twice as much for something if everybody assumes they're getting it for free because they don't want to pay for it. So then the burden falls on somebody else. You know, with the point about the bad actors and trading or whatever else, it's the sort of thing you can see in any little HR department too. If there's one bad actor in a company that circumvents some policy and causes problems, it's a lot easier to just crack down on everybody else and write a whole new policy instead of going after the person who bent the rules or ignored the rules and fire them or do whatever else you have to do to get rid of that kind of behavior. And it's the same thing with, you know, when it comes to the markets, I suspect, and business generally. It's better to just clamp down and be draconian and make it look like you're really doing something. But in the end, the bad actors are still going to find ways around this. And it's everybody else who suffers in the meantime with the additional regulation.
Well, Jan, there was a mentality coming out of the 1973 Board of Trade already had it. And the University of Chicago School, and I'll kind of go through this after the break, but there's the University of Chicago School, and the one time I could think of almost in life, or certainly in my economic life. Actually, if you go back in history, it's probably the only time, and I don't know what's so unique about the era, because I was, you know, I was, you and I were in school. Somehow or another, other than maybe Teddy Roosevelt doing some trust busting, the only time that competition made a big step forward was in this 1973 to 1978 period. There was somewhat of a, there was some kind of a unification between some of these bigger universities and some of the places like the Board of Trade. But the Board of Trade had always had, I'm going to say, a couple thousand members. Now, on any given day, you needed 300 people down there. But it was all decided where if all of a sudden, you know, corn went limit up or whatever, and 15 people got carried out, you had 400 other people to go there and make a market the next day. Right? You didn't, when something got busy, all of a sudden all these guys that were there one day a week or sitting in the bar, all of a sudden they're all on the floor. And even the CBOE when it opened. But now, ever since then, even the CBOE, which is a big complaint I had when I was there, they constantly less and less people till they got to where you had three people in a pit, four people in a pit instead of 10. There really wasn't much competition. And now we get, suppose, and I'm not accusing them, and I'm assuming they're okay. What if Citadel isn't okay? What if the $2 billion that they gave these guys that they just, you know, suppose they pissed it away instead of meeting a margin call and now they need another two? I mean, I'm not saying this is true at all, but what, we literally can't let Citadel go down now because they are, what, Manny, what are they, 40% of all the trades done or on options floors, or 50, 40, 30? I mean, there's a hole there. It's not like there's 15 firms and if we lose three of them, who cares? Once you start letting that happen, you got a problem, I think. S&P futures up 35, NASDAQ futures up 139. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Jan Flanagan with us. And S&P futures up 33. I expect that 34. And we've got NASDAQ futures up 134. Individual stocks, virtually everything's up. We've got Boeing up 231. We've got Amgen up 225. We've got, these things were all down heavy last night. Now they're all up, up, up. So, what a difference an hour or two makes. you think? I mean, really strange stuff. John, I'm trying to get the, I don't normally pop these up there, but I'm going to today because we, obviously we've got the metals way up. We've got oil up, and I'm going to look at, agriculture. Get a load of this. We got corn up 8 cents a bushel. We got wheat up 75 cents. We've got, cotton's up. Soybeans got to be up too somewhere in here, but, everything is up here. I mean, the Fed has got to be really wondering about this 2%, inflation number they keep striving for. So get a load of this. I go out to, I figure, you know, this is what, you know, I'm not sure why everybody wants, this gender unification kind of thing. Well, not everybody, but some people. All I know is Audrey was pretty happy when I showed up and shovel the snow for her. Even though I'll tell you what, this snow, this is serious stuff. I mean, it took me probably an hour and a half, 2 hours with a snowblower, for God's sake. And, so I get a load of this. Talk about a death in the family, John. I pull out I figure I need my big boots for this job. I pull out my L.O. Bean boots, and I use them for snowshoeing. You know, I don't wear them very often. I put them out, all of a sudden they like totally disintegrate. I'm like, what the hell? So Audrey's like, which dog's pooping all over the place? I go, that's not poop. That's the rubber of my shoe. Which dog? It's not the dog. But if you ever want to see somebody not happy, little Maggie, trying to do her business in the snow and it's over her head. She's looking at me like, what the hell's going on? Hey, shovel me a spot, will you? I'm like, okay.
It's no fun to be a small dog in weather like this.
No. So she gets two things on her messages from her real estate ladies. One of them is this little dog looking out the window and going, hey, screw this, I'm pooping inside. The other one was the third leading real estate broker in the state of Indiana, the leading real estate broker in Indiana for the third year in a row, and his big picture of Jay Pritzker. Yeah, you can't write this stuff, John. I mean, you know, but
I want to ask you, Tom, because I've been thinking about it since all this stuff has been developing this week. Do you see anything particularly unusual in all this, you know, GameStop, AMC, hedge fund madness? I can't believe it's that unusual at one level. It's just maybe the way social media has amplified things like this or masked who's really behind it, but it can't be that unusual or unprecedented. What's your take on that?
Well, there's several things that are sort of moving. All going the same, you know, all spinning at the same time. It's like the euphemism, the perfect storm. You have, ease of communications. You've got people with less money, but even, and I think what I was saying earlier about the bundling of these things into 100 lot things, you've always had some people that decide they want to pick on a stock and they short it. Now, how they do that while waiting for the uptick in the old days, they don't. So somehow or another, there's a way to get around that. And I don't, you know, we don't do that. I mean, I know how it's been done. I know people have been fined and have been actually banned from the business for helping out people that short stuff. And now, somehow or another, from what I read, again, it's, you know, this is, I'm trying not to be one of the politicians. And Matt, Frank and I and Carl spent a lot of the weekend going over, finding out, but we don't know what's going on. I honestly don't know how the hell, if somebody gets to be 130%, where 130% of the float is short interest, I don't know how you do that on an everyday basis. But I knew how the guy that made all the money in the Midwest Stock Exchange and LTV years ago did it because people kept buying it from him. But here's a stock that doesn't look like it's going anywhere. It's sleepy. I mean, I don't know why somebody would want to be such a huge short interest on a daily basis in like BlackBerry. The thing's trading $3. I mean, at the most you can make is three. If something bizarre happened like it did, you can lose infinite, right?
Right.
So I have no idea what the motivation is. If you buy a stock at $5, say you put up, well, you can margin it at $5. If you say you put up $250, the worst that can happen is you lose five. But I mean, it's one thing. Why do you want to stay long a stock for $3? And, well, I guess you do in case there's a short raid, but the idea is, why would you even want to do that? I mean, if you drove it down, it's at some point, your risk is that all of a sudden there's buyers, right? Just like if you're long a stock, the risk is all of a sudden people say, hey, this thing's not worth 40, it's worth 20, and they start selling it.
Right.
Well, so, I mean, there's a discipline to the market, but I don't see why anybody with GameStop, which to me looked like a pretty damn sleepy company, I'm not sure why you would want to be 130% short. Now, having said that, you're really more than 130% short because, as Carl explained on Friday, the float, there's people that can't or won't loan it out. So here at PTI, if you open up an account, there's going to be, if you have a margin agreement, we're going to say, and we, RBC is going to say in the margin agreement, by the way, unless you check this box, we don't want us to, if somebody wants to borrow your stock, we're going to lend it to them. Okay, well, most firms, people that have IRAs don't even have a margin agreement, so you're not forced to loan your stock out to anybody. We're not forced unless you say no. So, and plus there's people, I don't imagine, you know, maybe they do. Maybe some of these ETFs do lend it out. I think some of them don't. So not all of it's available to borrow. So if you really say 130%, it's probably more like 200% of the stuff that's actually available to be borrowed. So why would you just sit with that position day after day, month after month? I have no idea. But I see how they have these bear raids. And the guy that always comes to mind is Ackman. And I won't say anything bad except everybody can tell by my tone how I feel about the guy. How they give him, you know, sometimes an hour on CNBC to come out and talk really lousy about a company and the chairman's this and the chairman's that and they're cooking the books. He has no proof of any of that stuff. I mean, you know, but the point is, he's getting his point, and you have, if you're on there, people believe you. I mean, I'll see guys even, you know, that have been contributors to the show. If Dr. J talks about all kinds of option activity in a stock, and he'll conclude that the stock might be going up, you know what? I look at the thing, the stock goes up. The guy's on there. I mean, it's not like there isn't some method there. People don't believe these people. So, anyway, this thing starts to run up, and all of a sudden, one thing I do know is now your margin gets higher. Like in the stocks, if you buy a stock, okay, and it starts going down, you don't have to come up with any more money until it's 30% of the value, right? Your initial margin's 50 and your maintenance margin's 30. But on the short stuff, if you got a stock, you're short and you're playing a margin at 5, it goes to 10, your margin just doubled. And you got to feed the alligator there pretty quick. So people pour that in there. But I don't see why if you thought a stock might be worth $10, you'd sit on it at 3. Now, I don't think this, you know, GameStop is worth anywhere near 322, but it probably was a little more. Matter of fact, John, I did some expert witness testimony for a stock that'll go nameless. It was kind of interesting because this is a long time ago. They sent me a retainer, and I'm doing stuff, and I'm giving them a bill every month, and I kept the money. I didn't take it until I earned it. So all of a sudden, the lawyer croaks. Okay, this one's over, and they send me this huge box of crap. I go through all of it, and I'm writing reports, and all of a sudden, I'm thinking, oh, this one's dead. So sure enough, a year later, they hire another lawyer. Like a year later, all of a sudden, hey, are you the expert witness on this one? I go, well, yeah, I was, but I haven't heard anybody. Oh, yeah, we got a new guy. The other guy croaked. Oh, okay. So they start all over again. And finally, I'm on this call, and the stock's trading like 35. Company has a nice idea. If I name the name, you know who it was. It's a nice name, and I go, but it's not making any money. It's one of these online things. And there's a short interest that's reasonable. And they actually were going, they wanted me to prove that the reason that anybody who goes and buys a bunch of puts is guilty. And I'm guilty of what? They said, well, he's buying puts. By him buying puts, he's forcing the DPM or the specialist to, if he sells him the puts, that guy has to go sell stock. Therefore, I'm causing it by buying the puts, and I should be, like, named. And I go, what are you talking about? The whole idea is if I own 10,000 shares of stock, I might say, that's way too much for me. I can either start selling it, which obviously is a negative pressure on the stock, or I can say, you know what? If I can go out a year and a half or two or 6 months or whatever I want to do and buy puts as a way of insurance, where my risk is now not $50 a share, it's 45, I'm going to stay with the stock. It's actually a way for me being, instead of selling the stock at 100 delta, I'm buying puts at 50. They go, oh no, that's causing the other guy to sell stock, therefore you're part of the problem. Finally, John, literally there's five attorneys on a cell phone call. and there's me. And these are the guys that told me, again, this is like years ago. They go, by the way, you're worth $3.50 an hour. And I'm going, really? What am I, an attorney? That's cool.
You're in the wrong business.
I'm in the wrong business. Right. So they get in there and they said, you know, I got to ask a question. And they say, go ahead. You're our trader guy. I said, where do you, the stock's trading like 35 and a half. I said, where do you guys actually think this stock should be trading? Well, what do you mean? And I said, well, I'm not the attorney here, but if you think that there's harm, okay, the only harm in this is if you think that this thing is worth 60 and can somehow prove it if you ever can, and somehow or other these nefarious guys are shorting the shit out of it and it's down to 35. Now, so your harm is $25. You at least put a number on it. Well, we have no idea. I said, so it might in fact be worth exactly where it's trading. Well, yeah. I said, well, what are we doing? You know, it had some short interest to it, but it was 10 or 20%. It wasn't huge. I said, I don't see any long-term, I didn't even know the guy's name at the time, Ackerman kind of situation where somebody's just leaning on it and jumping on TV and saying it's a crap company. I don't see any of that. And the stock looks to me like it's very fairly valued. Maybe it's maybe it'd be a little high.
Well, and that makes me think that it isn't about the stock or any particular stock at all, but it's about identifying some vulnerability in the system or identifying
right.
a hedge fund to push it up against the wall. And I always have to think, well, who's behind that and who benefits from that? What's the point of all this? It certainly, as you say, it may very well be worth amount X. And in any event, none of this would be worth anything unless you wanted to prove some kind of point. And this is what I don't get.
Well, Jen,
more about what's motivating, you know, the pushback here.
One of the things is, and I don't know all the rules on this, but if you're going to be in earnings or you're going to be, there's times when you're going to make announcements where nobody at the company can say anything. It's called a quiet period. And I know a couple of the stocks that my clients have that have gotten these kind of, quote, bear raids. All of a sudden, as soon as you go into a quiet period, the one stock I'm talking about, they were on the, not the pink sheets, but they were on the next one up, and they were applying to be actually listed on the NASDAQ. And as soon as you make your application, you can't say anything until it's, you know, it's yes or no. Well, of course, the COVID comes around, and NASDAQ is slow on approving stuff. And in the meantime, the guys jump. All over it, you know, the chairman's, you know, whatever. Whatever he's doing, and by the way, they're cooking the books, they're doing all this stuff. And the company couldn't even respond. So this thing went from like $5 to like 50 cents. I mean, it can be very effective. But a lot of it is the misinformation. And if you wait until like, you can get ahead of the firm, okay, by utilizing these quiet periods. Now why the SEC doesn't look at that and say, wait a minute. You can always defend yourself or something. I mean, that obviously plays into the hands of these guys to a certain extent. And I don't know the rules enough to where, but I'm saying, if you're a regulator, you look for these little one-offs. You look for, okay, how are people doing? How is information getting out there? Is it legit? I mean, are these people registered? I could never do that. I mean, I could never run out there and say, bye, I got this huge position of stock and I'll sell the hell out of it. The company's no good. I could never do that. I mean, I'm a registered guy. So how these other guys, they got, you know, $90 bazillion more money than I do. How can they go say, man? I mean, how can a guy like Cramer, who I know is a lot of ways is a genius, but how can he come out and then say good things about a company just because he wants to interview the president? I mean, he doesn't know anything about whether he's right or wrong. Right?
Absolutely. This is why, you know, there's a whole, you know, aspect to this that is, it's kind of like, you know, shadow boxing or, you know, a proxy fight of some kind that I don't know who's behind what. I don't think it's about the stock at all. It's about something else. And it's got huge implications. Maybe it does show that there is some vulnerability in these hedge funds, that they have too much power or whatever else. But I don't think it's that. I think it's something else. And I can't identify it certainly.
Well, but if you even up, I've always gone, because I've seen it happen. I mean, I trade on a trading floor. And if you design the system so that the people in the system are competitive, they essentially watch each other. It doesn't make
right.
them philanthropic people. It doesn't mean if their shirt was unbuttoned, the heart's going to pop out of their chest. I mean, it just means that if it's, you don't have to police your corn farmers. I mean, you got to make sure they don't pollute the river and those kinds of things. But those guys can come and go. You don't have to run around and police every farmer and who he sells his crop to, right? Because it's a competitive thing. You don't have to police the saloons in town about where they charge for a beer because it's competitive, right? If a guy wants, we and I walk into a place, they want $10 for a beer, we're going to have our beer and we're going to walk out and never go back.
Right.
And so
that works very well.
And it works very well. So, I mean, I don't, the regulators, the people that are always, you know, one step behind, you know what, if you're not the lead dog in the pack, the view never changes. I mean, you know, the regulators, you can't set it up in such a way where the information flow is even. If the quiet periods cause a problem, change the quiet, do something. Because the discipline on somebody selling a stock worth 20 down to 10 is he gets it stuck right where the sun doesn't shine, right? Right? I mean,
a smart person won't go there, you know.
Well, I mean, the people are going to say, hey, this thing, over a period of time, maybe not over a day or a week, over a period of time, are going to say, hey, Flanagan Inc. is worth $20. What's it doing trading 10? And I'm going to start buying it, right? I mean, or if somebody pumps it up to 50 when it's worth 30, hey, screw this. I'm going to sell it. Once you start thinking your market can't discipline itself, and maybe it can't if you let the amount of players get too small, or you let the information flow get too uneven. But once you go around that road and say, the only thing that's going to make your market worthwhile for people, to make it a spot where you do for price discovery, is you have a bunch of regulators running around the place. Jan, I know that's not the answer. I mean, it's just not the answer.
God, no.
I mean, we'll get a bunch
of... You
don't
need a stock market then.
Yeah, you don't need... The whole point is, you don't need the... a farmer telling you, I mean, right now, if a farmer says the cost of corn, or the cost of corn's going up, if this cost of corn's too little, I'll show him I won't produce anything. Okay. So instead of being, the guy could have a 50 square mile farm, you know, in Iowa, right near where Matty Weber grew up. You know, the price of corn, because he's not there, instead of being $2.55 a bushel is what? $2.54.999. I mean, you know, it's going to make a little bit of a difference, but not much. You know, it's not a pimple on the butt of an elephant. So, I mean, that's how you don't have to police the OEX pit. There are always a few guys who chased a broker in there. There might be a couple guys who wanted to trade in the booth and have the thing. There were always a few slime bags, but everybody could put their finger. And the weird part of it was the people that wore the slime bags, and everybody knew who they were, the regulators never went after them because they were big.
Right, right.
So, I mean,
or it was, selective prosecution. It went one direction and not another. And some people, were pretty much immune. Do you think it could be something like that in this case, that this is just an attempt to force regulation or to spotlight a possible need for it? So you have people like Elizabeth Warren shooting off their mouths now all of a sudden?
Well, they'll get in front of a, they'll get in front of a camera no matter what it is. And they're going to talk about we need more regulation. But what are you trying to accomplish?
Right. I mean, I'm not saying it does anything, and it would be a terrible idea. But is this possible? Just a PR campaign to make a push for it?
Well, but I had a couple of times on the SIBO where actually, boy, the lady was the head of regulation. She hated me because one of the issues in the OEX was there were 350 people and it was pretty crowded. There were a couple guys that loved to hang around in the booths when the orders actually came in. And that sucked. I assume their motivation was to just trade it right there or not even go to open outcry. I couldn't accuse them of that because I wasn't in the booth. I was in the pit where you're supposed to be. Or if it was a big enough order, they'll run with the broker into the pit. And I'm sitting there going, okay, what if every time an order came in, 100 people chased the broker into the pit? I mean, that'd be kind of chaos, wouldn't it? So I said, I've been having some complaints that people are trading in these booths. And the lady says to me, how could I ever even take a look at something like that? And I said, well, I think you could probably, if you wanted to, you could probably check it out. Well, I have no idea how I could possibly check it out. And I never should have done this, Jan, because I've been made an enemy. But I said, if you walk up in the cafeteria where the members go and you look straight down on the window, you look straight down on all the booths. if you look down there from that spot 5 minutes a day, you'll know more in a week than I know now. But I tell you what, I did, there was not a, I was absolutely right. I should have fired her ass, but the point is it was not, I maybe shouldn't have said it in front of all those people, but the idea that you couldn't figure it out, it was right there. I mean, how basically you had a crow's nest right over the booths. I mean, how could you? So if there's, you see three slime balls hanging in there, you knew where the three slime balls were. So to the little bit of crap we had compared to all the trades, they didn't go after those guys at all. Right? So nothing's changed. So the idea, I think, is to design a system where everybody gets sort of to say what they want to say, and everybody knows what the rules are. And all of a sudden, I mean, let people price the stuff the way it's supposed to. If somebody wants to sell it at $8 and spend his entire life savings, do that when it's worth 15 at his own risk, right?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that the way? I don't need somebody to protect him. I don't need somebody to stand around. I do need, if everybody like us, I mean, if you, on account of PTI, you were Maddie and you wanted to short, I'm looking at Disney right now, it's up $1.95. If you wanted to short Disney and you send me an order, well, my brother or the rest of the guys here an order, say I want to short Disney at 171, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to locate it. We're going to make sure from RBC or IB that the stock is available. So we're going to locate it beforehand. We're going to follow every rule down the line. And if everybody does that, I don't see how the hell anybody gets to 130% of the stuff being short. So obviously somewhere along the line here, the regulators didn't do what they were supposed to do. However, we need more of them and we got to pay them more. Instead of just them doing what they're supposed to do. I think there always needs to be some rules in the game. I mean, you know, it's like football. There needs to be, or umpires in baseball, there needs to be an umpire, okay? Because there are rules to the game.
And, you need more umpires.
Yeah, but yeah, you don't need four umpires at every base. You know, I mean, what's the point?
You see people doing their job. I mean,
yeah, but their question should be that every once in a while somebody should look, if they're worried about stuff being short, which, I mean, there's no way on earth you get to that level of short in a stock that's not doing anything if everybody's locating everything. Because what are you locating from? If it's already out there. And every day, if we want, we go to IB or RBC, and if we ask the people on the desk, give us a list of the stocks that are hard to borrow, they'll tell us, they'll say this one, it's only 500 share limit, by the way, make sure you call us first. Everybody knows this stuff. Then all of a sudden, there's one or two people that manage, with all these rules that make sense, I'm not saying they don't, they do, all of a sudden, here's a guy who's short 90 billion shares. Well, who the hell did he locate it from? Or are they just too big to do anything? Or not? You can't go after him. Now, the specialist, he shouldn't have to locate, right? Because if I go in and buy 100 puts from the guy, he should be able to sell 5,000 shares of stock without finding it. Now, he, of course, if he knows he can't borrow it, then that's another story. But if it's IBM, if it's Disney, if it's easy to borrow, he doesn't really need to pick up the phone every time. I get that. But I'd also wonder, why all of a sudden the specialist is short more stock than is outstanding? I don't think that ever happens, John. But if it does, you sit there and go, wait a minute. What is this guy doing? Why does he need to be short all this stuff? I mean, what put him there? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Whatever questions, you need to start at the beginning. And I've been very careful this morning about not giving answers because I don't know the answers. But if I was the investigator, I'd say, okay, I want the history of all these people who have these short positions. When do they start? And why are they there? Now, if it's a specialist and all of a sudden there's a day when everybody came in and bought 90 bazillion puts and his short interest went from 10,000 shares to 300,000, I'll get that. I understand that. Some people came in and bought puts and you sold it. But then he doesn't want to sit with that position. Maybe the next day people are buying calls and he's buying the stock back, right? But if it's this constant, relentless, back in the day, you might want to be short stock because you got paid a bunch of interest, but nobody's paying any interest now. So there's really no reason to be short the stuff other than, you know, for a position. So you guys, I mean, are people qualified to start at the beginning or not? Probably not. Do they even care?
The question is, why are they there? I mean, how did they get there? I mean,
what if you find out that it is somebody like Citadel, somebody that big, or Goldman or something? What are you going to do? You're not going to ban them for life like you would me. I mean, what are you going to do? How do you spank them? You're not going to, because you let them get too big. I mean, what if Citadel didn't show up, if you said you can't trade today? I mean, what's going to happen to 40% of the order flow? I mean, what are we doing to even creating a situation like that?
Well, it's not only too big to fail, but it's too big to reprimand or too big to criticize.
Well, and then Friday afternoon, the guy from Goldman Sachs is on. Smug, want to slap him. All he does is talk about, you know, you got to have these people. It's okay for the retail people to be doing this, but they really should be giving their money like to us. Yeah, right. I mean, come on.
You know that's the tune they'd be singing, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. I will say absolutely truthfully, right now, if the market's doing what it's doing, I mean, I've talked to a lot of prospective clients and with the different places I'm. And my only piece of advice is, because I have no idea what's going to happen. If I did, I'd be, making huge dough every day. In this time of market, if you're going to start hedging yourself and you're going to be doing these kinds of things, you need somebody who knows what the hell they're doing. I mean, through the last 12 years, all you got to do is be long and go golf. I don't think you can't be. The last thing I say to people is be careful. You can't trade last year's market. You got to trade this year's market. And anybody who doesn't think after January that this year's market's not going to be different than last year's market, I mean, you got to have blinders on. I have no idea where it's going to end up, but anybody who thinks that it's this, everybody just buys the dip, steady grind up, I don't know, John. It may end up happening, but boy, they're sure giving us a bunch of signals now that maybe it won't, huh?
Well, the implications for silver, too. I mean, we got all this trembling today that the same thing is going to be done to the silver market, and I'm amused at some level because this is the sort of thing that keeps people on their toes, but it's also there's something so arbitrary and strange about it that makes me think it's part of some nefarious purpose here that's meant to take your attention away from what's really wrong here.
Well, Jan, here's the issues with this thing. It's a silver ETF, so allegedly the people who run, I should know the name, have the silver in a vault someplace. Right, but the silver on the futures is $29.88. Silver in the ETF is $27.27. Normally that spread is $1 to $1.50. Now it's up over $2. I'm curious as to why that is, because I have the SLV and it should be higher. Okay, but it's not. There's also been rumors that if you actually had an inventory of this stuff, that they wouldn't have enough. Now whether those rumors are true, I hope that if there are regulators, that's one of the things they're doing is checking to make sure these guys have enough. But also, if there's short interest in the SLV, I don't think that the people in Reddit realize that you could be long the future on the CME. So, if you're short it in one place, you're long it in the other place. You're pretty much, even though they're not fungible, you're pretty much flat, right?
Right.
Because you could demand delivery on the CME side, and you could make delivery on the ETF side, I believe. So it's not the same as a stock being. It may not be the same, assuming that the people that are short are the people that run the fund, or people that are selling this one and buying the other future, which I don't see why you'd do since the other one's $2 higher. But I don't think the people at Reddit have any idea of what the people's position are either in spot silver meaning you actually own the stuff, or the futures. So there's three things you can have. You can have the ETF, you can have the actual silver, the actual commodity, or you can have the future. So I don't see any way that you can look at this SLV and say the thing's overshorted by people that can't make the play. Because they who knows, the guy could have 1,000 pounds of silver sitting in his safe.
Right.
So, I mean, you gotta be careful with this one. But still, because that's the way things are going, as soon as I heard that, I went and got my people long. I just hope I'm long enough. Anyway, John, take care of yourself, bud. Thank you very much. SP Futures now up 32, NASDAQ Futures up 133. Dow's up like 225. All these things were totally reversed last night. But now here's where they are. Come back, we'll have Mr. Mike Hart.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox
at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currency.
Stocks! Jocks!
Stocks and jocks!
Stocks and jocks!
You are out of control!
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks! Jocks!
Stocks and jocks!
Stocks and jocks!
You are out of control!
Right here! Right now!
Right here, right now, right now. Hello, and welcome to Action Jackson. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Weber on the board. And Mr. Mike Hart's going to tell us why we turned around last night, because I know he got the memo. S&P futures up 33, NASDAQ futures up 136. So Mike bought his futures down 25, and now they're up 35. I think he could take the rest of the day off, Maddie. What do you think? Dow futures up 212. Big moves over around the rest of the world. Asia, South Korea, as I mentioned on Friday, were down 3%. Well, they bounced back to 3%, and they've jump-started all the rest of these, especially the Nikkei, up 427, 1.5%. Now, they were down Friday as well. They didn't have as bad a week as we did, but they had a bad week. Shanghai up 22.6. Hang Seng up 609, 2.1%. For Europe, we've got DAX up 190, 1.4%. FTSE up 67. It's 1% exactly. CAC around up 72. That's 1.3%. The U.S. on Friday, just for a refresher, Dow was down 620. That's 2%. S&P down 73. That was about 2%. NASDAQ down 266, 2%. So actually even sort of across the board. Bonds, 1.08. We got the, it's down one basis point. The Bund, minus 0.50. Japan almost up to positive 0.06, which is high as they've been like a really long time. Oil and all commodities, however, are going up today. Oil up 32 cents, 52.52. Brent up 53. 55.57. Natural gas up 20 cents here. It's a big move. Must be because of this storm. 276. RBOB, because it's supposed to get real cold out in the Northeast and cold here next weekend, so it's a little shock for the natural gas market. RBOB up 2 cents, 157. We've got gold, a big move here, up $18, 1865. Silver is the talk of the day, up 278. That's 10%, 29.80. Copper down a penny, so copper's not participating in this, at least today. A lot of stuff going on, Matty. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
A lot of stuff going on in traffic as well. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have issues on the Stevenson. That earlier crash on the outbound side still has the left lane blocked just before Kingery. So traffic is building. Lakeshore Drive to the Tri-State is up to 32 minutes on the Stevenson. To I-355 is up to an hour. So solid traffic on the outbound Stevenson due to that earlier crash. That crews are still working to get cleared. And then on the inbound side, there's a rollover crash on the right lane of the ramp to I-355 off the Stevenson. And that has delays on the inbound side. So all kinds of issues on I-55 this morning. So keep that in mind if you're heading out either to or from the southwestern suburbs on I-55. No issues on the I-57. We did have a couple of crashes on the outbound Ryan this morning, but apparently those are clear now, so that's good news. No significant delays in either direction on the Ryan, but more busy than it has been over the last couple of months this time of morning. So still slower travel times, but those accidents apparently have been cleared. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Same for the Eisenhower. On I-80, there's a pothole situation on the eastbound side at Hobolt Road, which is exit 127. Large pothole in the right center lane. IDOT has been notified, but no repairs are scheduled, so it's really slowing I-80 down as people navigate around that. So keep that in mind as well. Off the expressways, we have a crash in the western suburb, Central Avenue at Roddenberg Road. And then we have that building collapse on the south side that has Racine closed between 82nd and 81st. So those are the main issues this morning, but give yourself plenty of time if you are heading out because a lot of the side streets still aren't plowed after we got nearly a foot of snow in the area over the weekend. Weather today, overcast skies, a high of 32. Right now it's cloudy and 30 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 76 today. That sounds pretty good. Right now it's mostly clear and 55. In sports, the Blackhawks beat Columbus last night 3-1. College hoops, Loyola blew out Missouri State 72-46. Northwestern lost at home to Rutgers 64-56. And the Cubs added to their rotation, signing a former Pirate starting pitcher Trevor Williams to a one-year deal. Cheap. A
lot of stuff, Matty. When are we gonna start having some people in these stands?
Well, we do in a lot of places, but not here.
Boy, we're down to not very many positives every day. Mike, how are you, bud?
Hey, doing fantastic. Chief, how are you doing?
I don't know. I'll tell you by the end of the day, you know.
Yeah.
What are you... I'm sure you guys got your head in every one of these chat rooms, and you're making the trade right before they move.
Oh, you bet. No, actually, I'm not even watching the chat rooms, to be honest with you.
We got some people that... well, not me doing it, but some of the groups I'm with, and they get... So I'm kind of surprised at this silver, but there's a few other. There's some of these companies. I don't even know what's his outfit. NVAX is one of them, and what's the other one? F Funco or where the hell? I don't even know who these people are.
It's right.
It's hard for me to even to go about buying. But some of these you can actually get. I mean, if you're going to want to get a little Fubo, sorry, not Funco. What's the difference? It's up 10% this morning, $47. I don't even know what these people do, but somebody like the Nokias of the world. I mean, explain to me. I'm trying to get answers here. Why somebody would just sit massively short some stock like BlackBerry at $3 like forever? I mean, what?
I think it's worked forever. I think that sort of system of shorting the thing that's heading towards going out of business. I think it's been a massive short trade for a really long time, and I think the idea that something that's about to go out of business spiking, you know, thousands, tens of thousands percent points, it wasn't really on the radar of risks that could have happened. And I think GME just caught everyone massively by surprise. And the forces behind GME, well, if it's the Reddit crowd actually pushing it, that's an amazing feat. But it definitely shocked the system. There's no question about that.
But what's the motivation, Mike? Let's take BlackBerry, for instance. I mean, the stock wasn't a high flyer, but it was, you know, people had their BlackBerries. And all of a sudden, they still make them, and they still got patents. They make some money. So it's not, I don't think they're in danger of going totally out. But so you and I, or you guys be more honest than I would, you start shorting the thing, I don't know where the hell it was, say it was 25 or 30, you start shorting it, and it's 3, because I have a client that was in it. What is the motivation for staying massively short the thing at $3? I mean, you've made your point, you've made your $20.
It's the same trade. If you look last year, there were a lot of funds shorting volatility at all-time lows. So we had things like SVXY and other funds that actually blew out pretty badly volatility actually moved. It's the same question you would ask those funds. Why are you shorting something that we know historically has a limit to the downside. Volatility most certainly had a limit to the downside. We are right at it historically. Now, could we have broken historical norms? Absolutely. But as far as how much volatility are you going to make when the VIX is at 9, maybe a point in volatility, maybe. And yet the whole world still wanted to short these things. So I think it's not a lack of willing participants, to be completely honest.
Well, Mike, I'm going to lob something out there that is, for you or me, or I hope our listeners after all this time, is so damn ignorant I can't even go there, and yet I think it actually is a factor that, say, the VIX now is, you know, well, it's down today, but it's 31, so it was 33 on Friday. So I'm going to get some, say I want to just sell puts. I think the market's going to keep going up and blah, blah, blah. So I'm just going to sell puts in some of these stocks. Let's pick a stock, you know. Apple or something, or anything. I mean, obviously Apple's gone up for a long time now, so if you would have sold the puts for the last year, you'd done all right. That doesn't mean you can sell them today, right? But if you did, and you're normally, say you sell the puts $20 out of the money, and you're getting $2.50 for them, right? And all of a sudden it's 240, and it's 230, and your volatility's going down. But this is your strategy, right? I'm a put seller, I'm a premium seller. The motivation is, I used to be able to sell 100 of these things and make 25 grand. Now I'm selling 100 and now they're trading a buck. I'm only getting 10 grand. I think the motivation is you sell more. Nothing's happened. It's going up. Volatility's going down. I don't see any problems in the market. I think you end up selling more when they're lower, which is so counterintuitive to most people, but I don't think it is for that. That's our position. That's what we do. And,
right. And I think, you know, especially if your orientation is that of a fund that's just buying these things and you get X amount of dollars in, then you'd put X amount of dollars out. And if you can buy more, then you just buy more contracts. And I think it's human nature when something's lower and you were making $25,000 or $250,000 beforehand, you're only making 10 now. Well, naturally, let's just double up in size,
right,
and not do this intelligently, which is maybe change the delta level that you're doing it at or something that adjusts risk without changing the size. Because for every contract you increase, you're increasing risk by 100 shares of stock.
Right.
And that can add up multiples real quickly when you start adding 100 lots or 1,000 lots and so on. But even the difference between 1 to 10 lots, I mean, it's all a factor. It's a straight-up factor. Just multiply the number, add a zero, and that's where you're at for potential losses. So every time you increase the contract, you're increasing potential losses by that same magnitude.
Well, there's been a phenomenon when you think about it, Mike. I mean, you know more about certainly more recent studies than I do, but it seemed like every market top, 2000, 2007, you know, maybe even, you know, 87 for that matter, you always had kind of a record margin interest. You had record borrowing at the top,
yep,
and you usually had very, very low implied volatility, or VIX, as we call it now. And, I mean, the lowest volatility I can ever remember was August before the 87 crash. When the OEX, the puts, you could buy the puts for like 6.5 or 7. And there were buttons on the floor that said, just say no to puts. Because every day people, but I mean, if you're selling puts and that's what you do, maybe on a retail level or whatever it was, and you made money every single month, the fact that they went down means you just had to sell more, right? So I know in, one of the reasons why PTI, and shameless plug, was Money Manager of the Year at Morningstar in 2007, and there's only one reason for this. We weren't geniuses, Mike, is I had a lot of people, we got a lot of customers at that time, right before I was basically the bleep hit the fan. And,
yep,
and they all wanted to get invested. And literally, I'm going to say the volatility on some of the puts going out a year, year and a half, the leaps, Mike, it was down to like 7.5, 8, 9, somewhere in there. It was incredibly cheap. When we started doing this in 91, and on a percentage terms, if you picked a strike in the spider, and you went out a year and a half, you know, whatever, that's 18 to 20 months, and bought the at-the-money put, your percentage, you were paying basically 11, 12, maybe 12.5% of the underlying. Okay, now we're going to try and sell calls against it. It was our program. But even if you didn't, if you bought the put, if the stock went up over 12%, that was your break even, you know. Because, I mean, that's what the market hit it.
Right, right, exactly.
So that was I'm going to use the term, the normal price. All of a sudden, the market's going up. People are selling these puts. What do you need puts for? It goes up every day. The money that came into us, and it was like the summer of 2007, that number was down to like 7.5, 8. And I said,
yeah, that's amazingly low.
It was amazingly low. We're talking about out in a year and a half. So I said, you know what? Why don't we, since I thought the market was pretty high, why don't we spend the same 12% we normally do? So instead of buying, if you bought 200 shares, instead of buying two puts, we bought three. So it got us back up to the price we normally paid. But now, so when the market crapped out, not only did the volatility go from 8 to like 40 or more,
we had
extras. So we actually made a bunch of dough on the downside, which the program was never designed to do. Right.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's, you know, you're not timing the market because you can't possibly know that was going to happen.
No.
But just the fact that you stuck to the mechanics of the trade and you put the same amount of insurance money out there every month, that paid off huge.
But right now, you're paying to play everywhere here. And the other thing that's really odd, and this is what I was dying to talk to you about, Mike. Have you ever seen, the first time I ever saw a volatility skew was in the commodities when the soybean and corn options and wheat came on board in like whatever the hell that was, 1985 maybe, 84. And they had a volatility skew to the upside because we never really had a volatility skew that much in the options until 87 when all of a sudden people's risk parameters went a lot less. But now all of a sudden you're getting one of the stocks here I can't find. It was trading 586 on Friday. And it's one of these ones where, all of a sudden they're in play. They're short interest. And I'm sitting there going, how do I get long this thing? Well, they hit the skew to the upside on the calls was so high that you could buy the 510 spread for like a buck. And an intrinsic value was 90 cents. I'm thinking, I've never seen... I mean, I have no idea whether the stock's going to go up or down or whether you're going to basically piss away your buck. But that spread should not be that cheap.
I mean, right.
I mean, should it? I don't think so. You know.
Well, first of all, if you could get it off there, which it's hard to say in those markets, but let's assume you can. It's amazingly cheap, and that's just the power of volatility. Definitely, I like the idea of doing it in a spread form as opposed to doing it... as naked call risk, because it's so high, you know, just paying for this stuff is nonsensical, really. You're paying so much inflated, premium that's all a result of volatility, and should volatility begin to decline, which is a mathematical certainty at some point, you're going to lose big on those options by just buying them. But, that being said, you know, if this thing moves, if you could get filled there, you're not reading it wrong. That's the risk, and the risk is pretty small.
Well, when silver became, you know, one of these quote in play stocks. Although, I honestly believe, Mike, I don't know if I believe. I put a position on it here, but I don't think if you're short SLV, nobody knows whether you actually are long the commodity. You could have a huge chunk of it in a safe. Or if you're long the stuff on the board of trade. I mean, the people you think are short, they might be long.
It's hard to say. I think a lot of people have tried to corner the market in silver in the past. It's never worked. The idea of trying to short squeeze a commodity, I think they, Reddit has a big challenge ahead of them. I think they picked a beast that they're not going to be able to fight. But who knows? It'd be interesting if it happened.
Well, the silver hopped right away to where, I mean, the volatilities are not up on yet this morning, but I'm trying to remember what on Friday. I think the 25s.
It's pretty high.
Yeah, the 25s though were like a 70, and the 30s were like 100. So if you look at,
I have the 22s at 93. So the front month has a lot more vol.
Yeah.
The back months, if you go there, it's actually come down in the back months, Tom. and it's at like 60 in the back months.
Really? Well, I was looking here, like for this Friday, and again, this is not the 30 calls are like 26 cents. Well, the 27-30 call spread is 26 cents. For God's sake, the break even on one of them is 27-26, and the other one is 30-26. Which would you rather have 5 days out? I mean, granted, if it goes to 50, you'd rather just be naked along the 30s, but I don't think 50 is a given to you. I mean, I'd much rather have the spread and say thank you very much.
I would too, absolutely. And, you know, sentiment can go a long way, and if there's a sentiment out there that this thing's going higher, you might get a lot of buyers out there who might see the same. You're not going to see the same type of action as GME in this, but you might see a couple extra dollars pumped into silver, you know, over the next few days. So it might make for an interesting trade. As far as like a trade that I pulled off last week was in GME. The volatility got so off the charts that GME was trading at $320. I sold the 30 puts for $8.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes my effective break-even point $22 in the stock. I make money all the way down to $22 in silver over the next 51 days. It's an amazing number.
But I think you look at where these things have come from. I mean, Tesla's the same way. I mean, if you go out 6 months, when Tesla's trading, it's up today, it's trading 816. I mean, if you go out a few months, like the 400 puts are seriously bid.
Right.
But I mean, the stock has come from 400 to 800 in what, 6 months? So it's not like you can't go back there.
It's fresh in people's memories.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why you would buy those. I mean, your stock could go down by half and you still lose money on them. I mean,
I don't think there's any reason to buy them, but somebody is, because they stay bid.
Well, you know, that's the interesting part about options, Mike, is that stock is just a stock. It doesn't give you an opinion. It might be going up or it might be going down. But options sort of do. That it reminds me of, say a guy like you, even though you have the family and so forth, you know, you got the scratch. Oh, you might want to go out and buy a Corvette. So say the Corvette's 80 grand. You might say, I can handle that. Let me write the check out. But then the insurance guy says, hey, Mike, what are you doing? That thing's $5,000 a year to insure. There's a sobering thought in your mind. What do I do? Chain this thing to the curb? Is somebody gonna steal it the next day? Do I really want this thing? If the insurance, if the risk on it is this much, so sometimes when you look at a stock like GME, the thing was trading 300. This is like last week or 2 weeks ago, and the 300 puts are 150. Well, that ought to be a wake-up call of just how risky the rest of the world thinks.
Right.
That doesn't mean you don't want to buy it if you think it's going up. I'm not telling anybody to buy this thing. But it at least should say to you, holy bleep, Batman. I mean, somebody thinks this thing's going to be down. The market thinks this thing's going to be down $150 in 5 days.
Exactly. You know. Yep.
So, I mean, that's one thing about options is you can use the price as an educator sort of thing, right?
I think it more is an educator than an actual vehicle to make wealth, because the fact of the matter is, buying a call when the call price requires, say, if you bought the call for $150, you need $150 of movement just to start making money. You don't just need up movement; you need massive up movement, and the payout ratio really doesn't make sense for something that we're relatively certain, is a short squeeze, and we know short squeeze, they don't last forever. If this is in fact a short squeeze, we're going to expect to see price declines. It's just a question of how long can it hang out up here before it actually goes down.
Well, Jan, this is nothing but an opinion, because like I said, we've been trying to come up with the questions before we come up with answers on this, what's going on, but what are the chances you think of people trading 4 and 5 and 6, 10 shares actually driving something from $20 to 400 and keeping pace with the short sellers who think it's too high? I think the chances of that happening are like zero. Somebody else is involved.
No chance. I think there's a massive short on this, and maybe the initial 5, 10 shares, whatever, it caused enough to get past the initial buyback system, the buybacks happened, and it just caused the panic. And it was the perfect storm. This was set up to be the perfect storm. It was the perfect storm. I've never seen a short squeeze like this.
No, I haven't either.
For sure. And, you know, we all saw the regulation or the halting of the trades and the adjustment of what you, the type of risk that you can put on. And they're even doing that again today. And, you know, it's questionable if it's market manipulation. I think they can do it. They can get away with it. It's not good for their reputation, but no. It is what it is.
Oh, my God. So one of the firms, one of the stocks, they said you could do 100 shares, but you could do 50 options. Well, 50 options is 5,000 shares. What, do they even know what they're doing?
No, they don't, because they're saying you can buy 50 options. You shouldn't buy any options. That is really the worst play you can possibly make.
Right.
My opinion.
All right, bud. We'll talk to you later. Are you in tomorrow or Jeff?
I believe it's Jeff tomorrow.
Okay, we'll talk to you next week, buddy. Good luck this week. S&P Futures up 32, NASDAQ Futures up 135. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.